Greetings and welcome to this special edition of the MERS Monday podcast. I'm Kyle Malin with the boss, John Roering, Jack Spencer, and Jacob Kanzler. Today we're going to do a debate on Proposal 1, which is the legalization of recreational marijuana. Joining us here live at MERS World Headquarters is Josh Hovey. He is the spokesperson of Regulate Marijuana Like Alcohol, and Scott Greenlee. He's the president of Healthy and Productive Michigan. Thank you guys both for showing up here today.
Thank you, Kyle.
Yeah, thanks.
For our listeners' benefit, we'll read the language of Proposal 18-1, a proposed initiated law to authorize and legalize possession, use, and cultivation of marijuana products by individuals who are at least 21 years of age and older, and commercial sales of marijuana through state-licensed retailers. This proposal will allow individuals 21 and older to purchase, possess, and use marijuana and marijuana-infused edibles and grow up to 12 marijuana plants for personal consumption, impose a 10-ounce limit for marijuana kept at residence, and require amounts over 2.5 ounces be secured in locked containers, create a state licensing system for marijuana businesses, and allow municipalities to ban or restrict them, permit retail sales of marijuana and edibles subject to a 10% tax, dedicated to implementation costs, clinical trials, schools, roads, and municipalities where marijuana businesses are located. Change several current violations from crimes to civil infractions. All right, Josh, why don't you give our listeners here a couple minutes on what maybe wasn't covered here or the other kind of high selling points for this proposal for you?
Sure. Well, let me just start with why. Why are we doing this? And that is because the prohibition of marijuana, just like with alcohol, has been a complete failure. It's led to unsafe and untested products on the market. It's failed to stop people from consuming, and it's enriched criminal organizations. So rather than continuing on with that failed experiment, we're proposing a strong set of regulations that learns from the other states that have gone before us and already legalized and uses those best practices and gives people the civil liberties to do what they're frankly already doing in their own home, but without fear of arrest. We arrest 20,000 people in Michigan every single year and spend millions of taxpayer dollars to continue the failed policy of prohibition. Those arrests are majority for petty possession issues. We're talking about a quarter of an ounce of marijuana or less. And when you consider the fact that marijuana is, according to the National Institute on Drug Abuse, less addictive than alcohol or tobacco, we think the smarter policy is to regulate and tax it. And we're estimating upwards of $130 million every single year for our roads, our schools, and local governments. That's $500 million after the first 5 years of businesses operating. And when you consider all that, we think that the smarter choice is to support Proposal 1 and end the failed policy of prohibition.
Scott, what's wrong with this idea?
Well, there's a lot wrong with it. And one thing I do agree with Josh on is we should learn from states that have done this. And Colorado, of course, is the best example because they've got the longest track record of a place in America that has gone down this path. So in Colorado, we know that business organizations are having a huge problem hiring people because they can't find folks who pass a drug test. And that's one of the reasons that, to my knowledge, there is no chamber in the state of Michigan that thinks recreational marijuana is a good idea. None have endorsed it, whereas the state chamber and many of the regional chambers have come out against legalizing marijuana. There are jobs, for example, whether it's dealing with heavy machinery, whether it's dealing with transportation type companies, school bus drivers, where you can't have any level of impairment and anything to impede safety. And yet there are other companies that will want to stay drug free. So that is one huge challenge. Another challenge with the increased drug driving that occurs in Colorado. And to be clear, marijuana is cited in terms of traffic deaths. The number has doubled since they legalized recreational marijuana. So there are going to be more accidents. There are going to be more people driving and operating vehicles impaired. And I don't know about you guys, but I think I pay enough for auto insurance here in Michigan. And no matter how we hope that Lansing solves that problem, every state that has legalized recreational marijuana, the auto insurance rates have gone up, and again, with good reason, because there's a lot more challenges. And by the way, the reason law enforcement is so against this is there's no way to roadside test like there is for alcohol.
But isn't this a personal liberty issue?
You know, it's a personal liberty issue only if you agree that cocaine and heroin would be personal liberty issues. It's a personal liberty issue only if you, in this day and age, choose to ignore what federal law is and what federal law states in terms of how this is classified. This isn't a 10th Amendment issue. This is a federal issue. And legalizing would essentially say Michigan's going to choose to go down the path of picking and choosing what types of federal laws we currently enforce.
Josh, is it fair to classify marijuana and cocaine and heroin in the same category?
Well, it's absolutely not. One is marijuana is an approved medical treatment in the state of Michigan and in more than half of the states in the country. But going back to a couple points that Scott made, in regards to business concerns, businesses will be dealing with substance abuse and workplace safety issues whether Proposal 1 passes or not. Marijuana is in our state. It's been here for 100 years or more. It'll continue to be here. And rather than sticking our heads in the sand, we think the smart policy is to address it head on by regulating it. The second point about car accidents is when you look at the accident fatality rates in states that have legalized, the American Journal of Public Health has found no statistical significance between states with legalized marijuana and states without. So those are two points that I think are really important to keep in mind.
And so that's a red herring, you think?
I do. And I think when you look at it just from a logical standpoint, marijuana is so easy to access in this state right now. There's not a pocket of upstanding citizens in Michigan who are just waiting to try marijuana and start using it and ruining their lives with it if only it were legal. So the idea that substance use will increase with legalization, I think, is just completely illogical and just doesn't show on the track record of the other states that have gone before us. Yeah, adult use has increased slightly in the states that have legalized, but the adults that have increased their use are actually people 65 or older because they're rubbing it on their elbow and using it to manage pain.
One of the things that I wanted to ask you both is there's been a lot of talk about the medical marijuana structure. Does that apply exactly to what's on the ballot? How do you see that differing or aligning?
We tried to follow the law very closely in terms of the licensing setup. So we license the same types of businesses and give the state broad authority to determine its licensing rules and all of the procedures in place. The biggest difference between Michigan's medical marijuana licensing law and what we're proposing is removing that middle layer of government, the appointed, politically appointed licensing board that has caused a lot of problems, frankly, with the implementation of Michigan's medical marijuana licensing. We think that's an extra layer of government that doesn't need to be there. The State Department of Licensing and Regulatory Affairs is good at its job. They know how to regulate businesses in every other industry. And we think that's an improvement how the state regulates medical marijuana businesses.
So it seems like that this would be ready to go then. We've got the regulatory structure in place, Scott.
Sure. Sounds perfect. Going to be easy enough. But actually, it's far different. First of all, it's important for your listeners to know we're not talking about medical marijuana. So medical marijuana is in Michigan. It's here to stay. And this vote in November has nothing to do with that. So the 65-year-old person who chooses to rub a oil or a cream that has marijuana as a component on it on their elbow will not be impacted in any way, shape, or form with regard to this passing. Secondly, we know that it's been well over 9-10 years to get the medical situation in the current situation that it is, and they've just kind of redone it all in the last summer, the legislature did before they went on break. So we don't know how this is going to turn out. We know that for 10 years, there were a tremendous amount of challenges. We also know that there's going to be marijuana available in a lot more places if it's not just medical. There's going to be all these stores show up for recreational, so people can just go in and get their weed and go home and get high. There's a huge new regulation oversight that's going to need to be built. Law enforcement is very concerned about how they are going to manage this. And let's face it, while they say that they are learning from what was done and following the law for medical, medical and recreational are two very different things.
On the businesses not being able to hire people because people can't pass a drug test, why isn't that a compelling argument?
Because businesses are already dealing with marijuana and alcohol and prescription medication use today, and they're going to continue to deal with that, whether it's legal or not. And we met with the Michigan Chamber, we met with the Small Business Association, and asked them before we finalized our language, how can we improve this? And they said, we really want to make sure that we can enforce our workplace safety laws. And so that's why we made sure to include in this initiative protections for employers so that they can continue to test their employees and ban them from using if needed. This is a conversation businesses are already having, and it's a conversation they'll continue to have whether Proposal 1 passes or not.
It's interesting that he says they met with the chamber ahead of time. I know they did. And it's also interesting that the chamber is adamantly against the passage of this. What we've seen in Colorado, and Josh is correct, there are issues with workplace enforcement and people who are addicted to various substances currently in Michigan. What Colorado has found is it's gotten a whole lot worse, to the point that there are some businesses in the southern part of Colorado that are running help wanted ads and looking to hire people from Nebraska because nobody can pass a drug test. Quest Diagnostics did a recent report with regard to the drug testing challenges and passing of drug tests in states that have legalized recreational, and it's a complete mess. The common logic is something that people have to think about when they're talking about this issue, because you can often find stats on either side of this this issue. But at the end of the day, more of it around means more access to kids, means more people are going to be using it, means more drug driving. All of that just follows to suit, and it's happened in every state they've been. It's not red herring type arguments. These are facts.
Jacob, you got a follow-up?
Scott, I have a question for you. You said earlier that law enforcement is very worried about this. Yet we have Josh saying that we arrest 21,000 people in Michigan and spend millions of dollars enforcing the laws right now. How does this not lift a burden off law enforcement trying to regulate these petty crimes, as Josh called it?
Yeah, what a great question. So what you'll find if you dig a little deeper is there are very few people in jail or prison in the state of Michigan that are in for slight marijuana use, you know, half ounce, an ounce, maybe using some kind of edible or a joint at a party. Though the police aren't storming those people and arresting folks at those types of parties. If they happen, if there's a simple possession or a simple one-time or two-time use, they typically are ticketed, they typically are released. Now, why is he not lying then when he says that there are thousands of people in prison where marijuana is on their docket, both in jails and in prison? The truth of the matter is most of those people are in there because of other violations. For example, Kyle, if I left here today and I went 80 miles an hour down Ottawa, I'd probably get pulled over. So that's a violation. Then if I didn't have insurance, that'd be a second violation. Then if the officer could smell some marijuana, he'd have probable cause to search my vehicle. He'd find the half ounce. That's my third violation on that stop. Then as he continued to search my car, he finds three unregistered weapons in my trunk. That's a fourth violation, and guess which one's going to land me in jail? It's not speeding, it's not having insurance, and it's not marijuana. It's the unregistered weapons challenge. Another huge problem is people who are on probation, people who wind up getting out early for good behavior from whatever penalty that they're already incarcerated for, and then those people test positive for marijuana when they do a parole check-in or what have you, because, of course, marijuana stays in your system, unlike alcohol, for 15 to 30 days, depending on the physiological makeup of the individual. So somebody on October 1 does a hit of something, their PO comes in on the 15th and checks them, they're back in prison. Sure, they're back in prison because they used marijuana, but that's not really why they're back in prison. And that's why, literally, all law enforcement organizations are against this. The Michigan Sheriff's Association thinks it's a bad idea. The Michigan Prosecutors Association thinks it's a bad idea. The Michigan Chiefs of Police Association thinks it's a bad idea. If this were really going to help do away with the black market, if this is really going to save those departments millions of dollars, don't you think at least one organization in law enforcement would raise their hand and say, yeah, let's do this?
Do you have some law enforcement support, Josh?
Well, actually, just this weekend, Ingham County Prosecutor Carol Simon bucked her state association and come out in favor of Proposal 1. Also, I would just say that Scott really needs to look at the uniform crime reporting data from the FBI, because everything he said is basically not borne out in those facts. The vast majority, 77% of arrests, are for petty possession issues and are only for possession. That's
so
why
this
we
isn't
have
people who are being pulled over like he described, and with guns in the back.
No, the vast majority are for petty possession, and that is the only item on their arrest. So if you look at the FBI crime reporting data, it just doesn't bear out those facts. We can debate statistics and facts all we want, but it's just simply untrue.
And I don't think that's accurate in any way, shape, or form. But it is interesting that he's finally got one local county prosecutor to come out in favor of this. I think that folks will take a look at the associations themselves and of course the list of law enforcement individuals that stand against this this misguided proposal. And there's a lot more on that side, but hey, there is always one, or so it seems.
Okay, some of the horror stories we've heard coming from the states that have this, and you don't know whether they're accurate or not. But what about the idea of advertising? Once it's legal, do you start having advertising that can get in front of kids of all ages? And we know that everybody who watches an advertisement doesn't necessarily go for it, but a certain percentage always are influenced.
So, no, the initiative, in the initiative language, advertising is highly restricted, and there's broad authority given to LARA to ensure that businesses aren't marketing to minors and that the there are strong restrictions on advertising. That's one of the lessons that was learned from Colorado. When they first passed their law, they didn't have really tight restrictions on marketing to kids and having cartoons and on their packaging and things like that. We've learned that lesson, and we have the benefit of not being the first state to do this, and we've incorporated those lessons into this initiative.
So it's interesting, Colorado had many of those same type of requirements, not selling to people under 21, not marketing to people under 21, et cetera. Yet, if your listeners Google search, you know, Colorado marijuana products, children, you'll be stunned if you go to the images at some of the stuff that comes up that they are still doing to this day, and that no doubt will creep into Michigan. Will LARA have enough enforcement to track all those down? I don't know. Certainly Colorado has said that there's no way that they can keep track of all that. And when you've got a pot shop, for example, that has the Cookie Monster painted on the side of it, I'm not sure that they're trying to market to anybody in this room. They're probably trying to get kids interested and unfortunately develop those customers for a lifetime.
But if it's banned, I mean, if it's against the law, then they won't be able to do it. And we're all going to be watching, aren't we?
Well, I appreciate that. But how many people do you think we're going to be able to hire to oversee this major thing, which is another reason why it's not at all like the medical provisions? You know, this is going to be much, much more major. There were up to, at one point, 71 different dispensaries just in the city of Lansing. Not counting East Lansing, Holt, Hazlett, all these surrounding areas, there's going to be a lot more than that, obviously, when recreational is involved. And unfortunately, there's going to be no way to have the manpower to enforce it.
Josh, you're throwing your hands up over there.
I just think that's just a blatant fear-mongering tactic, and it's so ridiculous. We give communities the right to regulate and enforce their own local zoning laws, their licensing laws. They can ban these businesses altogether. And Lansing had an explosion of dispensaries a couple years ago because there were no regulations in place. When you regulate and you give local control, you ensure that communities are going to have only businesses that operate in reflection of the way that community wants. I mean, we've had almost all of the businesses across the state shut down over the last several months, and it's because regulation is working.
Yeah, I want to go back. You guys touched on an issue that has been publicly disputed by you guys both. It's the whether youth use of marijuana increases in legalized states. God, I'm looking at a press release from Josh's campaign that says teen use remains unchanged. So where are you getting your data from?
You bet. So there's data on all sides of this issue, of course. It is very easy to manipulate numbers to show whatever story you want to show. The thing that I'd tell people to do with this issue and with other issues where you're basically saying, well, my side says this or my side says this, is put your common sense hat on, folks. If there's more of something around, no matter what that something is, there is more access to it and more people use it. We've all read stories about what happened and this is a medical issue, of course, because the Arizona voters voted us down, but the poor kid in Arizona around the first of the year who had gone to a neighbor's house and grabbed some medical marijuana cookies and started eating it. If they hadn't gone down that path, they wouldn't have had those medical marijuana cookies in the house for the kid to grab. That was an extreme example, of course. That was a red herring per se. But with more of it around, with more shops around, with the black market not going away in states like Colorado, and in fact in ways getting worse, and your listeners should definitely Google search the May 29 NBC News cartel Colorado story. If you type those words in, you'll find it. You'll see that the cartels move in. You'll see that the black market doesn't go away because they want to sell to children. And common sense, again, dictates that there's no question with more of any product around, more people of all ages are going to have access to it.
Black market cartels? Is that what's going to happen, Josh?
Well, getting back to Jake's original question, Our data comes from the state health departments of Washington and Colorado. They have no interest in selling this one way or another. They just want to get to the facts. They found no statistical increase in teen use since those states have legalized. Getting to the cartel issue, if the black market didn't go away, then how is Washington and Colorado generating hundreds of millions of dollars every year in new tax revenue? That's legal, regulated market money that is coming into the state. Those states are generating $1 billion in sales each. That's regulated, not black market money. If the black market doesn't go away, are we saying that people are just expanding like crazy? No, it's not. It's that use is relatively the same, but it's moving into a regulated marketplace. Do we need more time for prohibition to continue to end, for the black market to be completely obliterated? Yes. But it's illogical to think that there's going to be a continued flourishing black market, that people would rather go down into the dark alley and buy their marijuana, where they can go to a well-lit, regulated store where they can, you know, if they're sold a bad product, there's repercussions. They can go to the health department and say, hey, they're selling tainted product. They can go and make sure the products are recalled. They can get returns. You think some drug dealer is going to return your marijuana cookie if you're sold a bad cookie? No. Regulation works. Legalization works.
That's interesting. He didn't address the May 29 Colorado NBC News report that showed hundreds of houses had been bought by foreign drug cartels in Colorado since they legalized. And in fact, DEA officials will tell you there's thousands, but they can only quantify hundreds of them because that's all they've been able to track down and officially bust. But there's a lot more than that. And the challenge, again, lies in the fact that people will still want to sell to minors. People will still want to send it to other parts around the country. And while he talks about economics, and maybe this is a good time to shift and talk about economics and all that tax money that's going to roll in. You know, I've been doing presentations with Josh, who's a great guy, even though we differ, obviously, on this issue, since about January, February of this year. And on slide 12 of his standard presentation, he's been telling folks that we're going to have $200 million of profits. It's slide 12, and it's very clearly stated. So I did a little math, and I said, what is $200 million in a $57 billion budget? And my answer when I did my math was 0.0034 of 1%. And of course, that's a gross number. There's a lot of state employees who are going to have to be hired to oversee this. There are other unintended consequences that other states have found. But just recently, on October 1, I believe, they released a report that they finally did a study. And instead of the $200 million that they've been saying all along since this campaign started, it came in at $520 million over 5 years, which actually breaks down to about $103, $104 million a year.
$103 and $104 million is chump change?
Well, in a $57 billion budget, it's 0.0017 of 1%. It's also a gross number, not a net number. But what will that really mean to Michigan? So let's say that $100 million number, now that it's been cut in half, is actually accurate this time. So $35 million of those dollars will go to roads, for example. Now, I drive as much as anybody. I want new and better and great roads. So I took a look at MDOT and I said, what does it cost to fix roads in Michigan? What's it cost to go out there and do the full repair? And it's about $1 million per lane per mile. Okay? So if that $100 million is actually a net number, not a gross number, and we actually get the full $35 million to repair roads, for example, on a stretch of I-75, you might be able to fix just under 9 miles worth of roads if we pass this. But wait, $35 million too for the schools, right? So that'd be exciting, only we played that game before. We've seen how the lottery money worked and the fact that we were promised, you know, schools were going to have a lot more money. And at the end of the day, our public schools are in trouble.
Well, let's get these numbers straight here, Josh. So how much are we going to get from this proposal? Is it 100 or 200
so
million?
So we had originally ballparked between 100 and 200 million. Obviously, we had hoped it would be more. Our economist came back and we didn't ask him to sugarcoat the numbers in any way. And he said, you know what? When the market's fully established, you're looking at probably $130 million a year in revenue.
Is that chump change?
I think it's a lot more than we're making off of marijuana right now in this state, which is approximately zero. And it's actually costing us millions and millions of dollars in enforcement. So we think this is an improvement for the state. The first tax dollars go to the enforcement and the setup of the regulations. And then everything else goes into fixing our roads and improving our schools and things like that. And we can only direct the money specifically to where it goes. And the language is very specific. It goes to roads, schools, and local governments.
And it's the legislature, a 43-3 split, right?
Approximately a third each.
Yeah.
35% to roads, 35% to schools, and then 30% each to, or 30% divided by 15 to municipalities and 15 to counties where there are marijuana businesses operating. We specifically direct the language to those resources because every time the legislature does its budget, those are the areas that seem to get shortchanged the most. And I think anyone who drives through our roads would agree. And to be frank, the legislature isn't able to raise any other money otherwise. I mean, it took them years to pass a road funding package, and that's not adequately funding our roads. So this is going to help with those road funding needs and our school funding needs. It's by no means a silver bullet. We're not trying to tell anyone that would be the case. But $130 million a year is better than zero.
Let's see if you can get something here that you guys might agree on. What about the perception that, and this is turning to the political here, the perception that if we really do get a blue wave, if it's a bigger Democratic turnout, that's going to help this thing pass?
I think polling shows that, yes, Democrats are more in favor of this than Republicans, but this is not a Democrat or Republican issue anymore. The idea of legalization polls fairly well when it comes to Republican Party and particularly the Libertarian wing of the party. They see it as a civil liberty issue and the idea that if you're doing something that's not harming anybody in the privacy of your own home, you should be able to do it without fear of harassment from police officers or fear of arrest. We make that point very clearly when we talk to libertarian groups, and we get a lot of heads nodding in the room.
Scott, you concerned about the blue wave?
I'm not overly concerned about it. I think that Josh is correct when he says more Republicans would be against this and more Democrats before this. But it seems like every day more and more Democrats are coming out, particularly in the law enforcement arena. And I think that this is an issue that really cuts across party lines. I would say that it's more of a age issue, a younger voter versus an older voter type of issue. And I would say that, you know, in this soundbite society that we live in right now, it's really easy to sell people on it by saying, look at all the people that are being helped medically, and wow, we could take in $100 million. Whereas when we dig a little deeper, we find out that the $100 million, if it's a net number, is 0.0017%, and this has nothing to do with medical. So the easy sale on these polls and stuff will get people to buy in. The people who take a little more time and research the issue become very, very hesitant because of things like unlimited potency, the drug driving, the access to kids, et cetera.
Assuming this passes and polling suggests it could, what would the legislature have to do, if anything, right out of the gate in order to effectuate this law that the people put in place?
Essentially, the process would be once the ballot results are certified, legalization of possession would take effect. So right there, we stop arresting 20,000 people every year for petty possession. And then there would be about 2 years for LARA to set up the rules and regulations, start accepting applications and licensed businesses. So realistically, we're not going to see businesses operating until 2020. So unless the legislature wants to direct more resources to speed up that licensing process, we shouldn't need any changes to the law for at least 2 years while we wait and see how it works.
So this isn't going to be like the medical marijuana law where we were itching for 8 years to do cleanup language, quote unquote.
No, because we've had the benefit of not being the first state to do this. This is not really a new thing. We've learned from Washington and Colorado, Oregon, Massachusetts, all these states that have set up similar laws. We've followed their best practices. May there be tweaks needed? Sure, but I think we need to let the law work and not rush to any judgment before we make any changes.
You know, it's interesting. I don't think we were the first state to have medical either.
Correct.
So I think that those folks, again, looked at best practices and had this great vision of, oh, it'll just be smooth. And we've obviously seen all the issues that occurred in that area and are just getting our hands around them now. Legislatively, the legislature will have the power to do some things, but it'll be very, very difficult, again, because of the way that the proposal was written. And I think that this proposal in and of itself is not written well. It's not flexible. It allows things like unlimited potency. It allows people to have the most marijuana on them or in their home or growing plants in their houses than any other recreational state. It also only taxes it at a 10% level, whereas in states like Colorado, you're seeing an effective 25% tax rate. And oh, by the way, the taxes aren't coming in there as projected either. So I actually know some people that casually use that are saying, you know, we think you're wrong on this, Scott. We think recreational marijuana should happen, and it is coming, but boy, we're not sure about this particular proposal. We're not, you know, that excited because of the 6,500 words that the average voter will never read. And believe it or not, in those 6,500 plus words, there's a lot of ambiguity. And the legislative challenges, as well as some of the law enforcement challenges, are some of the most critical things that have been left out.
Well, that's what I wanted to get at, because is society moving toward marijuana legalization? As a society, we become more acceptable of it, and isn't the legalization of marijuana at some point inevitable?
So because society is becoming more acceptable of something doesn't necessarily mean that it should, could, or will ever be made legal or put into law. There's that separation there, but no, I think that if we're going to legalize, we should have actually learned from other states and given people a much lower amount that they can carry around and taxed it at a much higher level and dedicated some of the money for prevention and substance abuse and rehab, none of which, by the way, is referred to. The fact that we're doing road schools and local control is great, but if I were writing this and I were in charge of it, I would have set aside a big chunk of money for prevention and a big chunk of money for rehabilitation, because we know those costs are coming. They did in Colorado.
See, we're taxing it at 10%. Why didn't we tax the hell out of it?
Well, I think it's funny that I think this is probably the first time that a Republican like Scott has ever argued for more taxes. So why is the tax rate set at 10%? It's because we learned the lessons of Colorado and Washington, and the goal is to get people to stop using the black market. And when you set your taxes too high, that doesn't encourage people to go to a regulated marketplace and pay when they can pay a high tax rate, or they go down to the person that they used to get their marijuana from. So we set it at a 10% tax and then a 6% sales tax. That's about 16%. That's pretty close to where states are going when they've recently legalized. So states like Massachusetts and others that have just legalized in 2016, their tax rates are also quite a bit lower. And we think that's where more and more states are going to go.
Wait, did he just say the black market didn't go away in Colorado? I think he did say the black market didn't go away.
We're trying to encourage people to make sure that they do use the regulated market. Sure, there might be some continued use of the black market, but over time, I think it's just logical to believe that people would rather buy from a regulated, safe place rather than a drug dealer.
So right. I'm glad that we agree that the black market's still going, and I think that if Josh is right on over time, we haven't had enough time on this yet. You know, there's only been 5 years in Colorado and a much shorter time in the other states that have legalized it recreationally, and we agree that the black market is still operational. I will tell you the black market is still thriving. There's no question about it. And there's the infestation of cartels in the May 29 NBC News report. So
right.
I'm glad we're at least concurring on black market activity in Colorado.
All right, Jacob?
Josh, I wanted to bring up something I heard from Scott earlier that I haven't heard before. The idea that auto insurance rates could go up because of legalized recreational. People hear that. That's not going to be good, is it?
I think you'd be hard-pressed to find a state in this country that hasn't had auto insurance rates go up. And to think that legalization is going to have any effect on what insurance companies are going to do, I think is a little silly, just because we have 30 states or so that have legalized medical marijuana. Insurance companies are going to use any excuse that they possibly can find to raise our rates. And we've seen that in Michigan, and the legislature needs to do something about that. I think it's a separate issue altogether. When you look at things like gender discrimination and socioeconomic discrimination that insurance companies do, those are bigger issues for the people of Michigan rather than legalization, and how that's in any way connected, I think, is spurious.
Josh knows a little bit about our no-fault law, Scott.
He does.
So be careful here.
He does. No, I'm always careful. But I'll tell you that in every state that's legalized recreational marijuana, insurance costs have come up. And the reason for this is obviously your drug driving, the lack of roadside testing that they don't have, and according to law enforcement in Michigan, they aren't particularly close on from a roadside testing standpoint. The fact that it stays in your system so long, so how do I know if you took something 3 weeks ago or you took something on your lunch break before you drove the kids home in the school bus? So it's a real issue. And will insurance companies look for reasons to raise rates? Absolutely. Is this a fantastic reason for them to do so? Absolutely. And oh, by the way, when you get into general corporate insurance, another reason the chamber is so against this is, well, first, business attraction, but second, the fact that liability for large companies that do a lot of transport, that have a lot of heavy machinery, et cetera, that's also going to go up. There's no question about it. Whether it should or not, whether the insurance companies are being bad guys by taking advantage of an opportunity and saying, hey, this is going to increase accidents, that that could be debated on another day, but the bottom line is it will.
Yeah, now, if I understand this right, it's 10% taxes. That doing it this way on the ballot, does that lock that in, or is there any way that the legislature could later come back and raise it to 25 or raise it to 20, or is it locked in at 10?
Yeah, so as Josh pointed, I'm not exactly a tax and spend guy. I don't believe in higher taxes, but if we're going to go down the road of, hey, we're going to get money for schools and for roads based on essentially bringing a market to Michigan that is going to damage the kids that go to those schools and is going to make those roads more dangerous due to drug driving, I think we should be more in line with higher tax rates. And it's my understanding that the legislature would need a 75%, a supermajority, to amend what would be voted in. So I think it'd be very tough to get a 75% plus one to change that. It's one of the many, many flaws in this proposal where I tell people, hey, even if you're for recreational marijuana, you ought to vote this one down. They ought to go back to the drawing board and present something a little more standard and a little more kid-friendly in a future election, or they ought to work with the legislature and have it implemented that way so that people aren't able to carry around 2.5 ounces of marijuana anywhere they go or aren't able to have 10 ounces at their homes and things like that.
Anything you want to say on this one, Josh?
I think having a supermajority on an important issue like this is actually a good thing because it requires bipartisan compromise and it ensures that any changes to the law that are made are not a one-sided big business, some lawmakers doing some favors for some friends type of a change. This is going to be a change that would be needed and it would be well debated and the result of compromise. So with any important piece of legislation, and this was certainly one of them, having bipartisan support and thorough debate and compromise, I think, is a very good thing.
All right, we're going to tie a bow on this discussion here on Proposal 1. Josh, anything that we didn't cover that you think our listeners should know?
Well, I think one thing I failed to mention is a new study just came out of Washington State University looking at how fast law enforcement is able to solve crimes. And they found that the rate that law enforcement is solving crimes in states like Washington and Colorado has increased as a result of legalization. The reason is because they're not wasting their time on enforcing petty possession and a failed policy of prohibition. So they're able to use their tax dollars more efficiently, solve real crimes that are impacting the quality of life in those states. And that's what we want to do in Michigan. We want to stop the waste of law enforcement resources on one side and then generate hundreds of millions of dollars on the other in new tax revenue. And we think that's a win for the state of Michigan.
All right, Scott, some closing thoughts? Anything you didn't get to that you wanted to tell
people? No, I'll just kind of reiterate a couple things since Josh took the law enforcement tact to end this. If it really was going to remove burdens from law enforcement, I think there'd be some law enforcement organization or more than one local county prosecutor that would raise their hand and say this is a good idea. The bottom line, it's not. Everybody knows that that's in law enforcement. Everybody knows this is a huge issue and going to be a huge problem for Michigan from a access standpoint, a kid marketing standpoint, and of course those unwanted visitors from other countries that operate cartels and find it easier to acquire marijuana in states that have made it quote unquote legal than it is to smuggle it into our country. It's a bad deal from that regard, but it's a bad deal really many levels as we've talked about. We're not ready for this, and it's the wrong proposal in terms of the wording if we were going to be ready for it. So we encourage people to learn more at www.healthyandproductivemi.com. Find us on Facebook at Healthy and Productive Michigan, and please join us in voting no on Proposal 18-1.
All right. Well, thank you to Scott Greenlee. He's the president of Healthy and Productive Michigan, and Josh Hovey with Regulate Marijuana Like Alcohol. Jack, Jacob, John, the lawnmowers again for being just like clockwork on Monday morning.
I thought we were going to get away with it, too. I really thought we were going to get away with it. We did.
Yeah. Wow. I don't know. It wasn't a very good omen when the bird ran out of the window.
No. That's a first. We've never had a bird run into our window before.
Poor guy's probably floundering around on the deck below.
Jeez. Scott did really good. He plowed right through.
He didn't even flinch. Everybody else was flinching.
I'm focused.
He's a cool customer.
He may not have even realized that we had a bird fly into our window.
Oh, I heard it.
All right. Well, thank you, everybody. Until next week, I'm Kyle Malin. Take care.